At this time, I would invite you to take a Bible and turn to John chapter 11, and children grades 3 and under can go to Children's Church if they would like. Several folks asked, how much of chapter 11? All of it? And I said, no, just some selected verses. Very, very familiar story. Now, a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with the perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble because they see the light of this world, but those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them. After saying this, he told them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right. Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died, but even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live, and everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world. When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, the teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Moving further down, verses 38 and following. Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days. Moving further down, verses 43 and 44. When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth and his face wrapped in a cloth. And Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go. Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what he had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the council and said, what are we to do? We're in that pre-Easter time to which people in some Christian traditions refer as Lent. A couple of Wednesdays ago, we spent some time talking about Lent and its meaning. One writer notes this concerning Lent, and I quote, "Lent invites us to step off of our mental treadmills, take a breath, and look around. Lent invites us to ask, where are we demanding solutions? Where are we stuck in tensions? Where are we blind, not noticing what is around us? For what do we hunger and thirst? What binds us, keeping us from accomplishing things?" End of quote. The passage for today is one which is so familiar that oftentimes we overlook some of its potential meaning. This particular passage, as you are probably aware, is very often used during Lent. But most of the time when that happens, it's right before Palm Sunday, because this event occurs shortly before Palm Sunday. And when we think about this story, when we hear this particular story, we sit back and say oftentimes, wow, just think, raising a man from the dead. And then we look toward the waving of the palms on Palm Sunday. Now, while the raising of Lazarus from the dead was Jesus' greatest miracle prior to his own crucifixion and resurrection, I want us to take a moment today, and instead of really looking at so much the miracle of raising Lazarus from the dead, though we will mention that a few more times, I want us to look more about the statement that Jesus made, not to the men, or not to Lazarus to come out, but to the men who were standing nearby, the statement, "Unbind him and let him go free." You know the story, and we read the story, or at least a good bit of it, just a few moments ago. Jesus and his disciples are across the Jordan, in the area around the Decapolis, when word comes that Lazarus is gravely ill. Jesus has spent time, he and his disciples all had spent time with Lazarus and his two sisters, Martha and Mary. In fact, they had become good friends. The text says that not only did they love Jesus, but Jesus loved them as well. And so Jesus receives word that Lazarus is gravely ill. And then he does something that kind of shocks and surprises. Instead of saying, "Okay, guys, let's go," Jesus decides to hang around for a couple of more days where they are, and then go to Bethany, where Lazarus, Mary, and Martha are. In the meantime, Lazarus dies. He's wrapped in his burial cloths and buried in a tomb. 4 days before Jesus arrives. No mistaking that Lazarus is dead, because he's been in the tomb for 4 days. And then Jesus arrives, much to the chagrin of his disciples, who say, "Well, you know, the Jews were just looking to kill you. If he's asleep, he'll wake up." And Jesus said, "No, he's dead. I was just trying to be nice." And so they finally go, and Jesus arrives. We know of Jesus' encounter, and we read of Jesus' encounter with both sisters here. First with Martha. "Lord, he wouldn't have died if you'd been here. And even now, I know that if you ask God something, he'll give it to you." Although, probably deep down inside, she really wasn't thinking anything more would happen. In fact, when Jesus says that he'll live again, she said, "Well, I know. We'll see each other someday." And then Mary, who comes and who falls at Jesus' feet, and rather tersely, I think, probably in hurt and in anger both, just says, "He wouldn't have died if you'd been here." Nothing else. And that disturbs Jesus greatly. We read a little bit about some of the reaction of the crowd. Some people believed, some didn't. Some ran right on to the Pharisees to tell them what was going on. And we got the initial reaction of the Sanhedrin, made up of Pharisees and Sadducees. What are we going to do? We can't let him go on like this. We could have read a little further, but you know what Caiaphas says. The high priest, he said, you're a bunch of dummies. Don't you understand that it's expedient for you that we have him killed? All of that's very familiar. But I want you to think with me for a few moments about the statement of Jesus to unbind Lazarus and to free him. To let him go. Perhaps you already are guessing where I'm going with this, and that's okay. Lazarus had been buried in traditional fashion. Hands tied in front of him. Feet tied together. Napkin tied over his face. And then wrapped in cloths. Well, the strips of cloth are those things that bind his hands and his feet. But typically, especially if you were well-to-do, and Lazarus seemed to be, but even not, there would be burial cloths, and typically the winding sheet, as it was called, would then be placed head to toe, and then wrapped around. We're not talking about the mummy that's just got little strips here and strips there. We're talking about someone totally bound, like being in a cocoon, if you would. If the person were not dead, imagine what it would be like to wake up in that kind of cocoon and unable to move. Pretty much impossible to get out of. In fact, in order for Lazarus to be raised, it took an order from Jesus. Lazarus, come out. But it also took an order from Jesus to remove the things that bound him. Because though he comes hopping out and shows up in the doorway, he's still bound in that winding sheet like a cocoon. And so it took an order from Jesus to have those bindings removed and to set him free. But you know, I would suggest to you and to me that Lazarus was not the only one that was bound that day. He was not the only one that needed to be unbound and freed. To be certain, no one else present was tied up in a winding sheet. But first of all, there were the disciples. The disciples who were bound by fear. The Jews are wanting to kill you. And in the back of their minds thinking, what will happen to us if something happens to you? They were bound with fear. Thomas even said, let us go so that we can die with him. Jesus says, well, you know, I'm glad I wasn't there. So that now you will see God's power and now you will know. And so the disciples go rather reluctantly, still bound in that fear. Then we have Martha. Martha who was bound by sorrow. Martha who wanted to believe in more than just what had happened. And who wanted to believe in what Jesus was there to do even more. But was still bound in that sorrow and bound in that lack of understanding. Martha, who was thinking, yeah, we'll meet again someday, and no, I'm not going to break into song. What am I to do now? Because you see, women, even though their family was fairly well off, women at that point in time really had a rough go. If their husband or the significant male in the household died, they couldn't work. And so there's that fear.
What will we do now?
Mary. Mary bound by sadness, and I kind of think, just from the one simple statement and nothing else, Mary, who was probably angry and disappointed, binding her and keeping her from fully understanding and experiencing that which Jesus would have her do. After all, I anointed you with perfume. I dried your feet with my hair. And you let my brother die? In fact, when she comes to Jesus, she doesn't come when she first hears He's there. She doesn't come until after Martha has come back and said, "Listen, He's out there and He's asking for you. You didn't come, Lord, and do what we expected you to do." Then you got the bystanders. Bystanders who were bound by their limited sight and their limited insight. Some even skeptical. In some of the part that we didn't read, it said Jesus approached the tomb and He wept. And some of them said, "Well, look how much He cared for him." And others said, "Well, if He really cared for him, how come He didn't come and keep him from dying? Maybe He's not so powerful after all." And can you imagine what some of those skeptics probably thought? Things that bound them when Jesus says, "Take away the stone." How cruel can He be to do that to this family? The guy's dead. Even his sister says he's got a certain air about him. Well, she does. Says, "You know, Lord, by now he stinks. He's been dead for 4 days." How about the men who moved the stone? I can just imagine this. "Take away the stone." "What? Yeah, take away the stone." And then when Lazarus shows up, "Okay, untie him." No. "My mama didn't raise no fool. He'd grab me and drag me back in there." Yeah. But those who moved the stone reluctantly, who didn't really believe. And then there were those who were bound by jealousy when they saw what happened and ran immediately to the Sanhedrin to tell them what had happened. It's not enough for them to believe and to bask in what they had just witnessed. They've got to run and tell the Sanhedrin, "You're not going to believe what he did. And if you don't do something about it, we're going to be in trouble." And then you got the Pharisees and the Sadducees who were filled with anxiety. "What are we going to do? If we keep letting him do things like this, the Romans will destroy the holy place and we'll be out of a job." Worried about their status. Bound up in their rules and their regulations. Bound up in such a way that they were blinded as to God's presence in a special way in Jesus. And of course there was Lazarus, who was bound by death but receives newness of life. But Jesus doesn't give just Lazarus newness of life and set him free from the death trappings. Jesus offers freedom. The freedom from being bound by all of these other things to everyone that was there. Jesus was offering to Martha. Jesus was offering to Mary. Jesus was offering to every one of the bystanders to be freed from the things that clouded their minds and their hearts and that caused them anxiety and fear in the way they lived their lives. Things that are all too present for many of us, are they not? Jesus offered freedom for the disciples from the fear of what to do next and of being persecuted, because He gives life and He gives strength and He gives guidance. And He promises to be with them and to guide them. With Mary and Martha, He offers freedom from anguish and anger. For the bystanders, He offers freedom from uncertainty and even from mourning. Even for the Sanhedrin, Jesus came to offer freedom. freedom from jealousy and a sense of self-righteousness and self-importance. Which then brings me back to that statement. Not for Lazarus, not for the bystanders, not for Mary, not for Martha, but for you and me. Jesus looks at us and the things that bind us. Jesus calls us to come out of the darkness into the light of His grace and His power. And then He looks at you and me and He says, unbind him or her and let them be free. It'd be nice if we had somebody out there who could unbind us and we could be just as free as Lazarus was and to walk away. Right? But before that can happen, we need to think, because we are the ones who participate in our unbinding at the behest and the guidance of Jesus. And we need to think for ourselves. What is it that binds me just as certainly as Lazarus' grave clothes bound him in a cocoon? Perhaps something that happened to us years ago. Or maybe something that just happened yesterday, which stays in our minds and keeps us from trusting, keeps us from moving forward in life. Perhaps something that someone said that hurt us deeply. Perhaps the loss of a job or the breakup of a close relationship which binds us with anxiety and anger. Perhaps a decision that went awry and now we're scared to make another one. And we're bound by that kind of fear. Or maybe there's something else which binds us. Anger at a person. Maybe even anger at God. Addiction. And we could give a whole list of possible addictions. Addictions to substances or behaviors which are detrimental. What binds us? What binds us? Jesus, in another passage recorded in Matthew, talks about binding things on earth and they'll be bound in heaven, and loosing things on earth and they'll be loosed in heaven. And that has all kinds of connotations to it. But sometimes the things that we bind ourselves with on earth keep us from being loosed into the world for heaven. And oftentimes those things that bind us are things for which we need forgiveness or to give forgiveness. And that's a large part of that passage in Matthew. I began by mentioning Lent. So as you think about those things that maybe are binding you today, Lent began on Ash Wednesday for most who celebrate that particular part of the church calendar. But I was doing some reading not long ago, and in the Russian Orthodox Church, and think, the Russian Orthodox Church that was so bound and had to go underground for so many years, decades. In the Russian Orthodox Church, Lent actually began on the Sunday evening before Ash Wednesday. And in the tradition of the Russian Orthodox Church, Lent starts on that Sunday in the evening with what is called Forgiveness Vespers. Forgiveness Vespers. And as part of that Vesper service, every person present, including the priest, kneels down before every other person present, face to face, and asks for forgiveness, and then is asked to give forgiveness. Perhaps a lack of forgiveness, either from someone else or by us towards someone else, is what binds us. Perhaps a personal vesper of forgiveness is what we need. It's hard to do. Maybe even harder than getting out of the grave clothes that bound Lazarus. But Jesus told those other men. Untangle him, unbind him. And he instructs you and me to do the same for ourselves and for others, to unbind each other so that we too might live in newness of life. And so, as we think about those things that bind us and keep us from truly growing and moving forward, Jesus stands and cries out to you and to me, "Come forth. Come out before me." And then he says to us, "Be unbound and set free." And he promises to be with us as long as we should live. So what binds us? May we be unbound. Our closing hymn, a hymn of decision, is hymn number 508, "Love Lifted Me." And indeed, it was Jesus' love that lifts us, and it was Jesus' love for Lazarus and Mary and Martha that lifted Lazarus from the grave. And it's Jesus' love that says, "Be unbound and be set free." Our altar is open. Hymn number 508, "Love Lifted Me."